What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, we're going to make you just want to drive to your local McDonald's and get a nice, big, juicy Big Mac, or maybe drive there and protest the entire restaurant entirely. Those poor choice words. Who knows? We'll try it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and sitting with me, the guy who derailed this week, the cold open, is his fault, because he gave me a dirty look, and I felt like I had to correct myself, Brad Miller.
I think you're making that up. I didn't look at you until after you said that was a poor choice of words, but what's up, and that was an interesting cold open, but I couldn't do it any better, so kudos to you.
And Mike Duranik.
I would have enjoyed this movie if it was about the founder of Taco Bell more, but, you know, you take what you can get.
Taco Bell had to be much less controversial, because Taco Bell has never lied about what they are.
No.
Never, not one time. They have always just openly said, we're giving you crappy food, and the point is that you're drunk and you don't care. No one has ever tried to make Taco Bell out to be some nice, wholesome
place.
And
if he had started Taco Bell, would it have been called Croco Bell?
Could be. Yeah, I wish. We are talking this week about The Founder, starring Michael Keaton. 2016 is the number that's popping into my head. I'll check. But Brad's choice for the month of January as we close out this month. So let's get into it with the question that I always ask, and that is what your first experience was with this film. Was it in the theaters when it came out? Did you catch it later on streaming or a rental or anything like that? If it was your first experience with the film, did you know anything about it prior to hitting play for the podcast?
According to the notes that I took on this film, it looks as though it was edited on November 25th. So I must have watched this film for the first time on November 25th, 2022. And I knew it was about the founder of McDonald's. As I told Mike a couple weeks ago, I thought it was more of a documentary. I didn't know what to expect, and I wanted to do something a little bit different. So it was not a documentary, and it was very similar to a lot of other films that we've done. But didn't really know what to expect, but glad I chose it.
Yeah, I had never seen it before, and I really didn't know what to expect because all I knew was Brad picked it, but after asking you, is that the kind of movie we can do? And you were like, yeah, that'd be fine, let's do that. And then I watched it, and that's what I had to ask Brad. I was like, what did you think this movie was that you were asking? Because, of course, this is a movie we could do. And that's when he said he thought it was like a documentary or a documentary-style movie. Didn't realize it was like this. So I didn't really carry anything into it. I picked up pretty quickly when I loaded it up, and they had the golden arches behind the guy that it was about McDonald's, and so therefore it must have been about the founder of McDonald's, but that's about all that I had.
Well, I have seen this movie a couple times before.
Red Eye territory?
No. Okay. Probably two times before this. It was not in the theaters. I know, oddly enough, I remember the exact first day that I watched it. I went home sick from work. I was only at work for like 20 minutes. Was sick, went home, and they had just put this on Netflix, so I watched it.
In the business, they call that a T. Higgins.
Yes. I mainly, what brought me to it was Michael Keaton. Love Michael Keaton. I'll watch almost anything that he's in, and so they just put this on Netflix, so I hit play on it, and really, really enjoyed it then, and I was glad that Brad mentioned it when we were looking for something to do for this month, because, you know, slim pickings here in January, but we had this. And I was glad that we knocked it out. So let's do the Rotten Tomatoes game. Brad, you are the sitting champion after getting it exactly right. Some would say that he might have cheated. So you will have the opportunity to go first and give your guess as to what the sitting score is for this, and then I will have the opportunity to snipe you one way or the other.
Okay. Michael Keaton is, he's a big star, but maybe not quite the name. Like, we just talked about Robin Williams and how that affected the score. So I'm going to say Keaton doesn't quite have the same kind of pull. The other actors are good, solid actors, but again, nothing that would affect the number that much. So basically just going off the quality of the film. I'm going to guess I probably liked this a little bit more than most critics, so my number is going to be higher, my personal number. I'm going to say probably an 83. I'll go 83.
That's tough. I know that this didn't get nominated for anything. So that usually leads me to believe that something's probably in the 70s. So I'm going to go with an 82 to play the game. Because this did not get nominated for anything. And I remember that it was kind of a flop at the box office. So I'm going to go with an 82.
All right, so Brad has an 83. Ethan has an 82. We are once again with one that is very close together here. The audience and the critics are 1 point off. But Brad, you allowed him to snipe you either way. The audience was an 82. The critics were an 81.
Okay.
You an 83, right?
Yes, I won.
Oh, Ethan.
There were so many numbers thrown out there that I got confused on what I was.
So, for those of you listening at home, Brad had 83, Ethan had 82. The audience was 82. The critics were 81. So we were all just bunched right in there. There you go. Ethan wins this week.
And
We'll see if we remember that when we record our first February one.
We'll find out. And I was correct. $25 million budget for this movie, it made $24 million at the box office. So this is actually a massive flop. This failed horrendously. As far as return on investment.
This is not the type of film that if I had seen this on a preview that I would say, oh yeah, I need to get my family in the car and go watch this. I mean, perfect Netflix film.
Yep.
Perfect, I don't know where I streamed it from. Maybe it was Netflix still. I don't know. I could see this does not seem like it would be destined for theater greatness.
Well, let's get into it, though. Our overall opinions of the film. 81% is the number from Rotten Tomatoes. From the critics, is Rotten Tomatoes correct? Is this movie an 81%? I'll start by saying no. I think they are incorrect, but I won't add any more to that, and I'm curious where you guys are at. 81% is Rotten Tomatoes correct?
No, I think I said when I was giving my score that my personal score would be a little higher. I think it'd be more high 80s for me. So depending on how far off our number has to be to say correct or incorrect, I'll just say no because I'd have it like 88, 89.
Yeah, I really liked this movie. I think the critics are too low on it. I think that this is easily a high 80s, potentially even clipping over into a low 90s movie. And as I look at the movies that were nominated for Best Picture this year, now this was an actual January release, right?
Yes, this came out in January of 16.
So this would have been the 17 Academy Awards.
Yes.
There's definitely a couple on here that I would imagine this should have been nominated in place of. I don't know all of these movies, but the only ones that I look at and go, well, I think I would rather watch that than this. Really, Arrival's the only one that I've seen, and I've not seen Manchester by the Sea, but I've heard good things about it, and so I would say Arrival and Manchester by the Sea I would put ahead of this. Your other ones, as you're looking, are Lion, La La Land,
oof.
Hidden Figures, Hell or High Water.
That's a good one.
Is it Hacksaw Ridge?
Great movie.
Decent. Okay, Fences, and then Moonlight, which won this year.
Yeah, I
some might say La La Land one, right?
Yeah, some literally did say that.
Some literally did say it, as I recall. Yes, exactly.
I think Fences got nominated because it was Denzel Washington leading a charge of what was basically a stage play and putting it on a screen. And that was more because of him, not because of the film. Hidden Figures, kind of the same thing. It was more subject than I think really quality of the film. I don't like La La Land. Lion, they always pick a foreign film and throw it in there. Like, this movie, I think, is right up there in the quality of... It's probably... I really enjoy Hacksaw Ridge. I'd go back to this before I'd go back to Hacksaw Ridge. That's content, too. I don't just enjoy watching some of those things as well. But this is...
To me, this doesn't hold a candle to Manchester by the Sea as far as... quality of film, but this is probably, since it's more rewatchable and it's an easier watch, this is one I would go back to.
Well, same thing. I don't think this holds a candle to Arrival or Hell or High Water, but just in terms of, does it deserve to be nominated? Yeah, 100%. When you're listing off those movies right there, it's a better movie.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious when we probably someday get around to doing Manchester by the Sea, where that falls with, you know, we've done Arrival. Yeah. We haven't done Hell or High Water, but I have seen that film and enjoy it. So that'll be, yeah, a couple to look forward to there.
So, yeah, I mean, and I think the driving force of this movie, I mentioned this a couple episodes ago. I talked about, you know, like the whatever perception a movie gives you determines whether you think like someone is good or bad or however, like I said when I mentioned that we are behind the characters in the town because we're seeing it from their perspective. If that movie was filmed from John Hamm's perspective, we would hate all those characters and have no attachment to them at all. This, and this is kind of becoming a trend now, like we're getting, it's more in the comic book world, we're getting comic book movies that are just solely focused on villains, new trend, whatever they're trying. This is not a good person, he's not a good guy. Right, like he ends up robbing these two guys blind from their creation and their idea and stuff like that because of who he is. And I don't think at any point they try to get us to necessarily be on his side, but they choose to give us this biopic from entirely this guy's perspective. They don't really pull any punches about who he is or how he is or whatever like that. But because of the performance Michael Keaton gives, because of how charismatic he has always been in his career, I think someone like him had to be the choice. Because if you did this without someone who's charismatic, if it was just terrible to watch this person live out their life on screen, this movie would be horrendous to watch. It would be awful to sit through. But because we get to kind of watch him be Michael Keaton in a way of he's got that salesman and that swag, like you get to watch that kind of unfold, it makes this entertaining even though you're watching a terrible person succeed. That's at least my perspective on it. Like, this movie is so great because Michael Keaton toes the line of, yes, this guy's a terrible person, but he's also charismatic and it's kind of fun to watch it happen.
See, I would go a bit of a different direction there. I don't think he started out as a terrible person. I think he was a grinder and is just looking for that next idea, that next thing, and once it took off, I think he saw them as bad people trying to hold him down and you know, make money off of him. He was doing all this work and not getting anything for it, and I think that attention, that fame, the money, all of that started going to his head, and he made bad choices. And then, of course, you know, I mean, I don't know how any of the three of us would handle that situation if we were in it. I would like to think we would all be kinder through that, but at the same time, like, you know, I've never been presented with that sort of decision to make, and you've got these two people that essentially stand in your way of what he can see is going to be the future that he created for himself and his family and those generations. Like, you know, does their idea of a small market thing, you know, is it going to be I don't know, I'm struggling with my words here, because like it was a small thing to jump over to become what he knew it was going to become, and how many of us would have made that same decision, you know? So ended up being a royal prick to them, but bad person. You know, I don't know. I don't know where I'd fall on that label, I guess.
Yeah, I think that he probably was inclined towards being a not a great person, and you see that. I mean, he was also a grinder trying to find his niche in life and his way to be successful, and he clearly saw in this something that, I don't know if it's that they didn't see it. I don't know. I think it's more that they didn't want it. But it's why you've got to be careful with who you get in bed with for business, right? Because their vision, the brother's vision, right, was slow and steady, do it right, enough is enough, it doesn't need to be big. And his vision was, how do we make a killing with this thing? And so when you have misaligned visions in business, someone's going to end up on the short end of that stick. And in this case, it was the brothers.
I mean, this is the Social Network all over again, you know, and I think that because, here's the part that makes this tough, I wish they wouldn't have put Michael Keaton in this role, because Michael Keaton is what makes this person endearing. I doubt that Ray Kroc is as endearing as Michael Keaton, but I'm such a Michael Keaton fan that I found myself rooting for this guy, and I want him to succeed. And yes, screw him. Step on him to get what you need, you know? But yeah, I think Mike's point is, like, you got to be careful with who you ask, because I don't remember the name of the character that Timberlake played in Social Network, but, like,
Sean Parker.
That guy could have derailed the whole thing. And then you've got, you know, one guy in James Garfield, mm-hmm. is that his name?
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. And
James was the president.
Yeah.
And then the guy that played Zuckerberg, like, they had two different visions for what it was going to become. And, like, now looking back, does anyone remember or care about those people that Zuckerberg stepped on to get to where he is? They're like, sweet, the Facebook, we got it, you know?
Yeah, just like people are running through their drive-thru grabbing their McDonald's, and they don't care about the brothers right. who gave and the name, right?
I'm guessing probably, you know, most major organizations like this, major companies, have had some sort of break off where somebody got stepped on along the way. I think it's just because it's Nick Offerman, because you have the sick other brother, you know, you start to care about them. But if you didn't have those two characters, you'd be like, dude, he gave you a chance to come along, you didn't want to come along, so he chewed you up and spit you out, you know?
Well, I think you're watching a process of someone getting worse and worse. Like, at the beginning of it, like, I still think that he's a dickhead from the start of it, but I think it's just, like, different levels of it. Like, at the beginning of it, he is a hustler and a grinder and things like that, but he's also, like, really terrible to his wife. Mm. Like, the way he really, like, he just shrugs his wife off at every opportunity that he can, right? Like, he would prefer to not be at home, almost, and he admits that. He says nothing would ever be enough. And he questions her supporting him and, like, things like that. And then, like, he takes her out to dinner at the club. But really the only reason he's doing that is so that he can get money from people. Like, so at that point, he's just a bad husband and kind of just, like, a low-level jerk. And then we just watch it get, like, there's different levels. There's moments of, you know, when he gets the idea from BJ Novak and creates his own corporation. Like, because then we're getting into, like, if you're really breaking down, like, He even admits what he's doing is illegal. He's just going up against people that cannot fight him. So, like, it's not even so much like you screwed someone over. Like, he willingly is just breaking the law to just F over some guys because they had a better idea.
Is he breaking the law or breaking a contract? Like,
no, in the eyes of the law, if you're breaking a contract, yeah. it's breaking a law probably, but it's business law as opposed to, like, the law of the land.
It's stealing their name, so, but it's not McDonald's, it's the McDonald's Corporation. Like, I mean, we just watch it go through, but you're right. I think it ends up being a positive, like, that it is Michael Keaton, because if it was Gary Oldman, I would end up just hating this movie, because we would just be watching 2 hours of someone I want to see fail, not fail. Like, the fact that it's Michael Keaton kind of carries you through. Also, an adulterer, right? Like, he also just ends up going to the point of cheating on his wife. He divorces her so he can be with the other woman, right? So at least he has the decency to do that. But, like, again, like, it's just, he is a bad dude. We just gloss over it because Michael Keaton is so good. And that's the driving force. How good of a performance he gives is fantastic.
Well, I also think part of it is the character has got a bit of an inferiority complex, right?
Absolutely.
And so is it that he's a bad dude, or is it that in his own pursuit of being the person he believes that he is, he gets such a hubris to it, becomes so addicted to it, that he ceases to differentiate between the two. I don't know. I agree with you. I think Keaton makes the character redeeming in a way that, you said Gary Oldman, that's a great pull there. There are certain actors that would have played it in a way that you would have said, yeah, no, I can't stand the fact that this guy's going to win. But to your point, Brad, I do think, like, this is capitalism 101, right? And there's no major company out there that hasn't had someone who at some point got screwed over in the process, or someone who, you know, took the stock option and bought out early and it would have been worth, you know, 20 times. I mean, it that is what it is.
Well, I mean, not to pull back the curtain too much, but even on a personal level, like, you know, Mike and I started at an organization at the same time, and, like, we had to make different choices for what we wanted. And we've had this conversation to where at some point, like, you decide, do I want to be friends with this person, or do I want to compete for this job with this person, or do I want to do something the same way as somebody else so I fit in with this group, or do I want to do things my way to, you know, meet my needs in a corporate ladder sort of situation. Like, we've openly had these conversations, and like, nobody would fault anybody for making decisions that they've made one way or the other. And but you can look back and see where, like, you know, if we were in a bigger money making corporation and Mike or I had made decisions that we have made, would someone see something of the nature of, well, that person had to step on this person to get to this spot and yada yada yada? But like, because we're not in that sort of business, I don't think it's viewed that way. But I think this happens in business every day, because you're competing for raises, you're competing for status, you're competing for your future, your family at home, you know, all of it's a competition. But luckily, a lot of us work in places where you want the competition to, what's the rising tide raises all ships, or whatever it's called. Like, we are working together for an end result. But if it were financial gain, then a lot of those things would be seen as like, well, I kind of have to step on that person to get to where I need to be. Luckily, that's just not the goal in the jobs that we've done. So, like you said, in capitalism, like, this is probably the story for just about, you know, all companies, unless even in family ones. But I would say sometimes in family ones you might not have this sort of situation, but ultimately somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose when it comes to financial gain. So I guess I don't know exactly where I was going with that, other than like, I think we all experience this in lower levels than what Ray Kroc did, but I'm guessing that a lot of us probably would have taken a very similar path, maybe done it with a little bit more kindness and subtlety to how we treat those other people, but who knows, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the big one, like, when he gets down to the end and tells him that the royalties are on a handshake, that's when, I mean, I remember thinking back to the first time I watched it, I just, like, put my head in my hands, like, come on. Like, why would you ever fall for that? Like...
Although, that seems to have been embellished for the purpose of this movie, because both of the brothers never said anything about that, and that claim came out of a nephew of the brothers who started perpetuating that. And I forget which one of them, I was reading on this, that one of the brothers was asked late in life if he had any regrets, and he said he had no regrets at all over the deal.
Okay.
So I do think that's one of those areas where, you know, you had the nephew saying this, and they were like, well, this will really... If nothing else, if you had a redeeming thought about Keaton's character in this,
that would do it.
Ray Kroc's character, like that moment. And so I think that they may have embellished that a little bit, but it did. It was effective. It turned the knife.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when you go, there's, you know, that's the Walter White moment where he's now left the shark, and you're like, I can't root for this guy anymore. He's a terrible person. I can't believe after all of this, he's about to screw them over like that.
Well, I think even before him visiting him in the hospital is like that's actually the moment for me where I'm like, you are just like the worst of the worst. Because he's not going there to give him flowers or check on him. Like, he's going in there to twist the knife a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, he does not care that he is in the hospital.
Would we feel the same way if he hadn't have stolen the name? Because, like, these guys were perfectly content running one restaurant in Southern California and doing it the best they could, or maybe a couple. They were perfectly fine with a couple of franchises or whatever. Like, he took their baby and he made it something else. But what if he had called it Burger King, or what if he'd called it something like that instead of McDonald's and didn't essentially steal their last name? Like, I think that's the part that makes it more difficult to swallow. But in some ways, like, he didn't take what they wanted. He didn't take their idea. He created something different. I think the bad part is he just took the name along with him.
He took their efficiency. He took their system for that efficiency. That stuff, in theory, could be duplicated, right? I agree with you, though. I mean, there's a reason why McDonald's is so successful even to this day. And strangely, it's one of those things that the name just hits it out of the park.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, how would you feel about that? Well, I don't think we'd be eating at McDonald's everywhere if he hadn't stolen the name, strangely enough. Because what does McDonald's have that a Burger King or an Arby's or a Hardee's doesn't have? They've all stolen the system for efficiency and how do you, right. you know, get the product as quick as possible, and, but as cheap as possible. I think it is the name, strangely enough.
Right, and he says that. He says, I needed the name, but I don't think we'd feel as bad for this family if he just said, hey, here's $1 million because I took your idea, which isn't, it's not a copyrighted thing, you know, you can't copyright
efficiency. Well, or if they did have something in there that they could copyright, they didn't.
Right. So he didn't steal that per se. He literally stole the name and mm-hmm. used their infrastructure of business to start these things. But then he took it 100 levels higher. And if he had just walked away and said, hey, I went out of my contract. Here's $1 million to each of you. You go do your thing, whatever. I'm going to go start Burger Joint. I'm going to go start In-N-Out Burger, you know. And I don't know that we'd feel... I don't think we'd be calling him a bad guy,
I think,
you know.
I think what puts it... And again, well, maybe some of this is even in dispute. But what, like, regardless of what he ended up calling it, the dude's an asshole. Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being an asshole. But, like, I mean, just the way that he treats people and talks to people, the interactions he had with the guy in Minneapolis, just oogling his wife right in front of him, like, he's an asshole. Which is fine.
But see, I also argue that guy used his wife as a... And I think he was putting her out there as a, hey, like...
They both can be assholes.
Right. Like, but... I think the guy's like, hey, you want to go talk to my wife? And,
yeah,
you know, like it.
Yeah, they're all playing business.
But what sends him into, at least in the case of this movie, like focused on like what we see on the screen, what makes him sadistic is the handshake deal, the conversation in the bathroom, basically rubbing it in his face of like, I know your own company better than you do, you hick. Like, let me explain to you why I'm so smart. And then building the McDonald's right across the street from their place that they specifically said they wanted to keep and give to their employees as a token of their hard work. And he did it just as a big F you, I'm going to put you out of business anyway. Like, those three things are, you've now transitioned from you're just kind of a dick that's, like, good at business to you're a sadistic asshole. Like, you're not a good person in any level.
Mm-hmm.
And then, which is a great touch. I mean, none of this is, like, I'm not, all of this is why this is a great movie. The touch at the end of when he's practicing his speech... And he has now stolen the speech from the record that he listened to at the beginning of the movie, and he's gonna pawn it off as his own words because he can't create his own good ideas, which I think is what he gets to at the end, too. Like, he knows that he's kind of a failure. He had to find someone else's success to create his own, and then that is just shown at the end. I'm just gonna steal this record that I heard some guy sound inspirational. I'm gonna say it's my own. Because he starts doing that, too, right? Like, he... When people are asking him, I think it's the husband and wife in Minneapolis, he's like, oh yeah, I started McDonald's in Des Plaines 3 years ago, or whatever. Like, he just stops even allowing someone to believe that anyone else could have any part of this. Like, I created McDonald's. I don't even know where I came up with the name at. It just sounded good. Like, there's a lot of, like, sick things going on.
Yeah, he said he started believing his own stuff, yeah. Right? And at the same time, I think that is what happens. I think there's an interesting question there of, is it the guy who has the idea that is the great businessman or the person who can extrapolate it, right? And you pointed out with The Social Network, right? Like, I think that there's a parallel there. You have this idea, but it wasn't going anywhere, certainly to the scale of where Zuckerberg took it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Winklevoss twins had done, you know, what they were going to do for Harvard, it's extremely unlikely that would have taken off. But Zuckerberg had, like, just a singular focus. And so, yeah, maybe he steals the idea, but it's his drive that takes it there. And I wonder if that's what you don't have here. I mean, clearly in this case, there was no ambition from the McDonald's brothers. Kroc is the one who had the ambition. And so neither one of them could have done it without the other.
Well, he had the ambition, but even he wasn't the catalyst for McDonald's. If this, I don't know how true to life this story is, but it's B.J. Novak's character that allowed him to become what he would. Like, he's like, no, it's about the land, and you're going to lease, you're going to go buy the land, and you're going to lease it to these people, and that's how you're going to make your money, you know? And if that part is true, we don't have McDonald's today like we do if we don't have this guy saying, hey, go do this, buy the land. So he's really the, not, obviously not the founder of McDonald's, but the reason that the founder of McDonald's was able to be successful.
Right.
And I guess we should air quote founder of McDonald's because he
if I read this right, like Kroc was only the CEO of it for about a decade. And so that's the other crazy thing. And then he ended up buying the San Diego Padres for a decade before he passed away. So, yeah. But I think, again, that's just that's the way that sometimes the business world works, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really relatively crazy. But that's not dissimilar from Sean Parker, you know, in the role that maybe he played in helping Zuckerberg to think bigger and drive it bigger. And so a lot of parallels there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about Michael Keaton before. I think this is up there as one of his best performances.
It's no Mr. Mom.
On a serious note, I was going to say it would be tough to top Spotlight for me, just based on how the impact that movie had. But this is a movie he's on screen a lot more in. I'd say it's definitely up there. I don't really know if we need to get into that whole conversation, but I mean, this is one of his few best performances, I think, that I've ever seen him do.
I enjoyed him in Birdman as well.
Yeah, which he got nominated for Birdman. He didn't get nominated for this. So, favorite scene from The Founder?
Well, I guess I don't really have one. I in my notes here, I left that blank because there wasn't anything that necessarily stood out as my favorite. I was weirdly intrigued by this film, like one of those that you can't really look away from because I just liked what he was doing with it. I think it was, if I had to pick one, was it in the bathroom that he said, where he admitted he had to have the name?
Yeah.
I think that's probably my favorite scene where they're having that because, and he also says to him, and neither of these are my favorite lines, but where he says to him, like, you know, you did win, like, you have a check for $1 million in your pocket, you know, like, you're winning here. And seeing Nick Offerman's character and how he's kind of realizing, like, you know what? This is what I would have wanted. So, you know, he just kind of has that realization. He wants to punch the guy in the face because he's a prick. But, yeah, he did win. And, you know, I liked the story of how he realized he had to have the name. And as Mike said, he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Like, without that name,
what is
probably
it?
Not as successful.
Mine is the first time that he gets at near the beginning of the movie, but when he sees McDonald's for the first time. And, like, is super confused and orders, and the guy gives him his food, and he's like, no, I just ordered. And he's like, yeah. Like, so what do? You eat it. You can go to your car or sit down or, like, just they're both just so confused at why neither of them are understanding what's happening in this conversation. And then it's done well, and, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, that's kind of funny. And then the more I've thought about it and the times I've rewatched it, that would be crazy, right? Like, I can't imagine anything like that because, you know, I've grown up, we all have, with fast food being a centralized thing. Like,
there is something that, and I'll get on it when you're done with your point.
Just to see something so revolutionary, it doesn't feel like it to us now, but in the 50s, like, I just said what I wanted. How is this here? What is this, like, some kind of weird dark magic? What are we doing? Like, that, I just think that they did a really good job of setting the world up that this was taking place in and just how innovative and how important it was what these guys made.
In our lifetime, and I assume Mike's probably old enough to realize this too or have seen it change, but like for me it was coffee. Coffee went from something that you made in your kitchen that people would tease you about it stunting your growth and tasted kind of gross to, yeah, you know, some people drink it, some people don't like it, to it being a cultural explosion because one company, and obviously we'll point to Starbucks, there were a few others here and there that did this, but I still remember my mind, having to wrap my mind around, I'm going to go into this place and order and pay more for something that I sometimes make in my kitchen at home. But, you know, because we were talking about Folgers and Maxwell House, and, like, that's what we drank. And now it's like, oh, wait, we're going to go here and we're going to pay $5. But, like, now, like, my kids have never lived in a world that didn't have a coffee shop on every block. And everybody, I use everybody loosely, but most people have to have this in their day or else they're not going to function. And they will drop... You know, they'll go in and order two coffees and drop $10 or $11 and not think twice about it. And it's like, you know, I think back to $10 when we were younger would have, you'd had a coffee for 6 months at home, you know, like it's just interesting in life how that's changed. And I think that's similar to the experience that he had when he walked into McDonald's for the first time.
I can't, like, for me, I mean, obviously if you had told me when I was 10 years old, that I would be able to press a button on my phone and you and I would be able to see each other's faces while we were talking. That would have...
Or play pool. We played pool against each other one day. It's like...
Or, like, that would have obviously blown my mind. Mm-hmm. But in my life, it's been gradual. Like, it wasn't just that just appeared one day. Like, we had we had Skype and then we had, you know, like, we worked our way up. Like, it was clear where this was headed. Just to suddenly one day, like... 15 years ago, if someone would have handed you an iPhone and been like, hey, press this button, you're going to see someone's face, you'd have been like, what the hell are you talking about?
I can kind of get you there, though, because I am technologically adverse. I don't like technology in general, and I tend to be very slow on technology. I was very late to the streaming game, and I remember when my now wife, you know, bought a Roku for me, and I was like, what is this? I couldn't understand the concept.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, well, you plug it into your TV, right? And I was like, okay, and then what? And she's like, well, and then you pay for a subscription to something, and then you can just watch movies. I was like, well, like, but how does that work?
Yes.
Because I was still, like, DVDs. And so I was years late to the Netflix thing, and it still didn't compute until all of a sudden it was just streaming on my TV. And I was like, but... So, yeah, long story short is that's as close in this day and age as I think I could have gotten to that. But I do think, you know, Brad, your broader point, but we've lived in a world over the last 20 years of just insane technological. I mean, you probably don't remember, but you remember, I'm sure, the first time you heard about Amazon as this online bookseller, right? And to think about how that has completely changed the world, it's just mind-blowing. Well,
one other one, and I know we're going down a rabbit trail here, but this isn't technology. I guess in some ways it is, but, like, earlier tonight, I came in here talking to you guys about online sports betting that I was doing on my phone sitting in someone's basement because it's legal in the state of Indiana. Like, less than half my life ago, well, like maybe a little more than half my life ago, I distinctly remember in high school, the age of 18, going to a bar in a local town, walking in, having to ask the bartender if they had the sports betting thing because you could pay $5 and you could pick three teams, and if your teams won, you got this money. And the first question that I would get, you a cop? You know, like, because they would have to ask that or whatever. And it's like, they didn't care that I was under 21, but she cared if I was a cop, you know. And she hands me this thing, and I throw the $5 down because it was like this business that, you know, degenerates did. And if you spend all your money, someone would come break your kneecaps or whatever. And now it's like in society, like just about everybody or most people, you know, if they don't do it on a regular basis, have at least tried it or are around people that are doing it. It's a common thing. You know, it's neat how that stuff changes. And the food in this movie just happens to be the catalyst for that.
It's just that you're just degenerates do. And, but like, I'll break your kneecaps if you need.
I would almost guarantee that 50 years ago, the organization that we work for, if someone knew that you had that you regularly gambled, you probably wouldn't be allowed to work, right? Like,
yeah, you know, I think that that's definitely a possibility.
Right, but now, today, when I get to work on Monday morning, me and my supervisor, I don't know if I'm out, well, because it's legal now, so I'm not outing anybody, but we sit and talk, did you bet last night? What'd you bet on? Oh, I won this bet. Like, it's just, it's okay.
It is legal now.
Like, so it's just...
But even just a number of years ago, you would have had to have gone to a casino and gone into a sports book, and now, so long story short is technology always evolving.
Do you have a favorite scene, Mike, from The Founder?
All I will just highlight is I do think what makes his character at least somewhat redeeming Keaton's character, and at least, or maybe not redeeming, but it helps you to understand why when he sees this idea and he realizes it's going to work, he just follows it to the ends of the earth, mm-hmm. is he does such a great job every time that he walks one of those mixers in to try to sell it, the way that he's throwing it back in his trunk afterwards, and you just see the exhaustion on his face of trying to sell these mixers, you know, these milkshake mixers. I think that he helps you to build some empathy for him for how, like, lost his life is in those scenes.
For favorite line, Brad's going to go last because he has the best one. I want him to close out the show with it. Mine is the conversation he has with the Bible salesman. And he just, when he asks him, what's a Jew doing selling Catholic Bibles and just making a living? Like, and that goes into the whole thing. Like, yes, he is a grinder and a hustler. There are parts of him that, you know, dive into the American dream, and he sees that in someone else, and that, you know, gets the idea to hire him. I thought that was really creative how they did that and showed that through a different person. Mike, do you have any favorite lines?
I looked this one up, and I think I've got a paraphrase here, but while you two boys were content to sit back and become a couple of also-rans, I want to take the future. I want to win, and you don't get there by being some aw-shucks guy. There's no place in business for that. And so, yeah, I just think he does a good job in that scene.
Brad, what's the true best line from The Founder?
Well, that's some pure dick magic right there.
Yes, it is. And we always hope that on this show we bring you guys some pure dick magic. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Next week, I have no idea how we'll be bringing that magic to you, because I don't know what movie we're going to talk about, but we will be here talking about some movie that we will decide on our own time. That'll be all the way into February. That's way far into the future for us.
I can tell you what we're doing.
Yeah?
Would you like to know?
Sure, yeah.
Next time on The Three Pole, we're going to be talking about Black Panther.
Oh, that is available to us, and yes, we will. We will be kicking off February with Black Panther from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That'll be then. This was The Founder. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. And other than that, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.